Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, May 1st, 2024, on 91.7 FM WHUS Doors. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Meniza. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprouts. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live and Instagram Live episode at Fran Storch ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Okay, since Ron stepped out, I'll just let you know a little bit about what's going on with me health-wise. As usual, I am up and down. I was feeling pretty good. I'm mostly back on my bike, although on Friday I was very, very tired, and very, very tired turned into an episode of tremors, unfortunately, which turned into I didn't get to ride my bike on Saturday, so I missed this lovely event, which was a celebration of the new Whitewater Park that's being built up in Willimantic off of Bridge Street. So I missed out on that, but big shout out to everybody who went. Lots of shout out to my friends Nancy and Don, who led the ride instead of me. I'm so grateful that they were able to do that. And my friend Billy, who helped to make it all happen. So they had a good time anyway. And then yesterday I was able to get on my bike on the trainer. It was icky rainy in the morning, so I got on the bike in the morning. I didn't feel like waiting till the afternoon. And on Mondays, when we often record the show, I usually like to get my exercise done before the show because I find them just too tired in the afternoon. So even though it's going to be one of those first really warm days today, I decided to go out in the morning. It was pretty warm in the morning. It's the first time I've been able to get out for a workout before the show this year because it was in the high 60s or mid 60s, high 60s, and I got a workout. My goodness. And so I had an episode of dysautonomia on Friday, Saturday, and today I did hill repeats. So it was the first time I did hill repeats this year.
Wow.
Yeah.
You didn't tell me you did hill repeats.
I did hill repeats, yes. Yeah.
Crazy girl.
Yes, there were two guys working at the house at the top of Lower North Bedford, Bedlam Little Pitch there. So I did hello to them, and I went up and down six times. And then I climbed all the way up to Davis, one Davis, and climbed up Davis and then turned right and went all the way up to the end of Federal.
They must have thought you were nuts.
And turned around and then came all the way back. And that's a great descent. That's 3 miles from the house, the top of Federal.
You can fly down it.
And you fly down that.
Yeah.
You fly down most of it. And then, you have to climb up from Federal. There's a little pitch until you get to a farm, but it's not as bad as climbing up the other direction. Then you go screaming most of the way down, and then you have to do some up and down once you cross Bedlam Four Corners. But I told the guys, have a nice day, and they said hi, and that was nice. And so that's what I did this morning. And later today, I'll probably take a Yono yoga class, which will be very nice. Last week, I had tried to take a hypertension med because I was very worried about my blood pressure. My blood pressure seemed to be spiking, but I think my blood pressure was spiking, one, because I was worried about it, and two, because I was in a lot of pain. I had a femoral neuralgia flare. My femoral neuralgia flare, I knock on wood, appears to be done. No pain in my butt.
Oh, what's a femoral neuralgic flare?
Femoral neuralgia. Well, the femoral nerve is a nerve that arises from between L2 to L4. Okay. So a lot of people get sciatica, and the sciatic nerve arises from L4 to S5.
Okay.
And it wraps around your butt and goes through your butt and then goes behind your leg and then wraps around to the side of your leg. And when you have nerve pain there, that's called sciatica.
Okay.
And if you have the femoral nerve is higher up, it's between L2 and L4, and it also comes out at a similar place. It'll go into your butt, but then it wraps around to the front of your leg. And I had a lot of pain in my tuchus, in my buttock,
right.
And that wrapped around to the side and the front of my leg.
Technical term, tuchus.
So yes, tuchus is a technical term. It's true. And I've been doing a lot of work for it, a lot of stretching, You know, I always take a lot of things that can be helpful for nerve pain. Benfotiamine, which is, benfotiamine is activated vitamin B1. I take phosphatidylserine, which is good for your cell membranes of your nerves, your nerve sheaths. And I take curcumin, which is anti-inflammatory. I take fish oil and black cumin seed oil and MCT oil and borage oil. So between those oils, and then I eat olive oil and virgin coconut oil. So I'm pretty oily. And so I have all these lovely, healthy oils that help me to have healthy nerves and stuff and a good brain and like that. And so my femoral neuralgia is very good. And the other thing I must attribute to the healing of the femoral neuralgia is good care from Dr. Scott, my chiropractor. So he's been straightening me out, and that's very good. And then I'm looking very much forward to another treatment with Dr. Scott Wednesday and another treatment with my acupuncturist, Nicole, on Friday before I head out to Florida next week. So there'll be a break in live radio naturopaths. Maybe I will do some reels from Florida, but I'm not going to make a show for a couple of weeks. So that'll be nice for me. I mean, I know. And if you have questions for me, you can always get a hold of me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. And you can also hit me up. You can DM me on Instagram at FranStorchND and ask me questions, and I will usually answer for you. So I wound up on Sunday night. I was worried about my blood pressure, so I took 5 milligrams of olmesartan, which my doc had prescribed last year, and I was very afraid to take. And I had a very good day on Monday, and I was able to exercise through it, and my blood pressure did come down. So I said, okay, I'll take it. I'll take another dose. So on Monday, I took the dose of olmesartan in the evening. I had had another treatment from Dr. Scott, and it was the Passover Seder, so I had some wine. And that night, I got up to go to the bathroom, and I sat down to go and started to see hazy, starry. Wasn't good. Started to feel nauseated. Got off the toilet real quick, ran to the bed, laid down, had a great sweat. And so I had almost fainted. And I haven't fainted or almost fainted in 3 years. So I said, all right, tomorrow I'm not taking that drug. And a couple days later, I had a visit with my doctor, and my doctor took my blood pressure and said, you know, your blood pressure is really good in the office here. And if it's good in the office here, that means a lot of the time it's good. And if you're waking up in the middle of the night and fainting, it's taking you too low. So this teeny tiny dose of olmesartan was too much for me. So I'm back to fish oil, amla, olive leaf, grapeseed extract, hawthorn, relaxing, breathing, and not worrying about my blood pressure, which was my direction for my PCP. Having said that, I'm still going to talk about blood pressure today. So I'm not saying to you, hey, if you're on blood pressure meds, you shouldn't take them. No, that is a decision for you between you and your doctor. If it brings your blood pressure down and you don't have side effects, then you're in good shape. That's okay. Because having high blood pressure isn't good. If you have high blood pressure, you're at more risk for atherosclerosis, hardening of your arteries, and you're also more risk for stroke. So it's not good to have high blood pressure. And so working on having lower blood pressure is a good idea. And we're going to talk about ways you can get your blood pressure down without necessarily taking medicine. But if you are taking medicine and it is working for you and you are not having side effects, this is a good thing and you should keep doing it, in my opinion. So before we get on to talking about hypertension, let's find out how Ron is doing. How is Ron doing?
Oh, you know, not great, but, you know, still alive and kicking.
I saw you fixing up bikes yesterday and taking them for test drives. How did that go?
That felt pretty good, but, you know, those test rides were, you know, 2/10 of a mile, 3/10 of a mile. They weren't very long.
But you didn't feel bad after you did them.
I was okay, but I was a little off this morning. So I will say that, you know, a little too much probably yesterday.
Yeah, but you were excited by riding a bike.
It just felt so good.
I know.
It just felt so good, you know, to be back on the bike. And I might try it again more
give it
times
a day
this week, maybe another day.
Maybe not today.
Maybe not today.
You felt off today. It's not good to do it today.
Right. But I was thinking of riding the rail trail into spin class tonight, but I don't think so. Probably not.
No. I don't think you should. Well, are you going to ride the bike at spin class tonight?
I don't think I'll be doing that.
No?
I have not been doing that for 3 weeks.
Right.
So, no. Not planning on it.
You should be patient.
I'm trying to be patient. That's the hardest part. It's the hardest part, really. Because, you know, I'll have two steps forward and then one giant leap backwards.
I feel two songs coming on. Mm. Number one, the waiting is the hardest part.
That's Tom.
And number two is two steps forward and two steps back.
Mm-hmm.
And that the next line doesn't really apply.
All that.
So, right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we're tired of not feeling well. And I'm very sad that I missed a club ride this weekend. And then I was okay. The one thing I will say is that when I have flares of tremors and stuff, I seem to bounce back from them quicker than I used to. And so, like today, I had tremors on Friday, and on Sunday I rode my bike indoors, and today I rode outside, and somewhat aggressively. So that's good news. And I am starting to wonder, how much of the tremors, I'm pretty sure I had Lyme disease and Bartonella, and I'm starting to withdraw from the herbs that I was taking. And the thing with the herbs is you always have the herbs, and, you know, I always have a source for the herbs. And if I have a setback, I can take them again. You know, I have them on hand and I can always take them. But I decided to start backing down again, because you get to a point where you start to think that the herbs are making you not feel well, the herbs themselves, because you take some herbs for a long period of time, they can affect how you feel. And, you know, for example, the modified citrus pectin, although it's a wonderful anti-inflammatory, it's pulling a lot of junk out of you all the time. So constant detoxing is not exciting. And then there's, the various herbs from Buhner. They're wonderful herbs, but like Chinese skullcap, if you take it long enough, it can start to raise your liver enzymes. And my doc did my liver enzymes. And my liver enzymes, one of them is high normal, and the other one is just out of read. So I'm a little concerned that it's too much herbs. Because I don't drink alcohol. I don't eat enough starch and sugar to give me fatty liver, I don't think. And we eat so much fiber. So I'm wondering if I'm overdoing some of the things I'm taking. So we have to work on that, too. We're sort of digging our way out of this. I have to figure out how to not get so tired at work. And I think the answer there is I have to work in breaks during the workday, like some time to close my eyes and rest during the workday, which is really important. I mean, just taking a 5-minute break and closing your eyes and doing some deep breathing can be a real help. And if you have 5 minutes, it might be worth it to push the end of your workday a little bit later, so that you can take a break, because if you take that break, you'll be more efficient. This is something I have to tell myself. Instead of like using my lunchtime to get as much work done as I can, take some time to breathe and lay down and rest, and the work will get done, and it'll get done faster because I'll be more efficient and I'll enjoy it more. So, all right. So that's what we have going on now. Now let's talk about the natural treatment of hypertension. I'm sure I've talked about it before in the last few years, but, you know, there's always new information that comes out. So we'll see what's what. All right. So here's some natural ways to treat hypertension. All right. So let's get started. One of the ways to help naturally to reduce your blood pressure is to get exercise. There's a shock.
Let me get the big D-U-H out
there. The big D-U-H.
The big D-U-H, yes.
All right. That both resistance training and cardio exercise can help delay or manage blood pressure. After exercising, blood pressure may be lower for up to 24 hours after. So if you get regular exercise, your blood pressure is going to sit lower all the time. And I'm wondering if my blood pressure climbed because I wasn't getting as much cardio as I used to get. Regular exercise means you increase your heart and breathing rate. Over time, your heart gets stronger, pumps with less effort, puts less pressure on your arteries, and your whole blood pressure goes down. The CDC recommendation is at least 2.5 hours of moderate intensity exercise a week, or about 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week. For kids and teens, 1 hour of exercise a day, because they are, you know, they're very energetic and fit, and, running around is really good for them. And if you don't let your kids run around, you're going to pay for it by having cranky, jumpy, hard to get to sleep kids inside your house. Something I always talk about, I've noticed that when I have had the fortune to have children in families that farm, those kids are the quietest, most relaxed kids I have seen, because they understand that when they come inside, you sit down and rest, because you're outside being so active all day. So getting inside is a chance to relax. So when they're in my office, they're not the kids that are running around. Kids that are running around a lot in the office, I have to wonder if they're getting enough physical activity. What do you say about thoroughbreds?
You got to run them.
Got to run them. Got it. And what are kids? Thoroughbreds.
Got to run them.
Got to run them. Yep, pretty much. All right. So here's some ways you can increase your activity levels without necessarily thinking of it as exercise. You can use the stairs more. You can walk instead of driving. You can do chores around the house. And then chores around the house can include gardening, and or the word that I'm not sure who made up this word. It's very funny, but yardio. Yardio, get it? Yardio.
No? Like a rodeo in the yard?
Cardio in the yard, yes, yardio. Mm-hmm. You could go for a bike ride, although bike ride is, I think of as exercise. And you could play a team sport, which can be really fun. Regular exercise is good for you in so many ways. Another thing to help with your blood pressure is to manage your weight. If you have extra body weight, it strains your heart and your cardiovascular system, which can raise blood pressure. If you have a BMI of 25 or over, that would be me. If you just lose 5 to 10 pounds, it can reduce your blood pressure and lower your risk of a lot of other health problems. So just losing a little bit of weight, that could mean, so if you want to lose 5 to 10 pounds, I'm not going to sit here and say, take Ozempic. Not going to do that. But to lose 5 to 10 pounds, check yourself. Are you doing that thing where at the end of the day, you have all the snacks and you're snacking in front of the TV and it turns into a whole bag of popcorn or a whole chocolate bar or a whole bag of popcorn and a chocolate bar and just too much snacking? Number one, something to look at. Number two could be, are you drinking too much alcohol? So are you drinking a glass of wine every single day? If you cut back on alcohol, if you do nothing else but cut back on alcohol, sometimes that you can lose weight. You'll lose 5 to 10 pounds. Are you drinking too much soda, sugary soda? You cut out the soda or cut back on the soda. So instead of having an alcoholic drink or a soda every single day, consider having one glass maybe twice a week and have it on days that you're getting extra exercise. So that's another thing. So other things are, people love their caffeine. And I know that a lot of people they like their coffee in the morning. And so many people have coffee. They're not necessarily getting a lot of exercise, or they're getting a little bit of exercise, and they have a coffee with a lot of fat, like some kind of a fatty creamer. People love their half and half. And it's even worse if they put sweetener in it. So let's say I don't add any sugar, but I put vanilla, French vanilla creamer in. Okay, is the French vanilla creamer sweet? Yes. So remember that sugar and fat together, or starch and fat together, will cause weight gain. So if you're eating starch and fat together frequently, or sugar and fat together, and what are your two favorite foods that combine sugar and fat? Or starch and fat. Think of a food that you absolutely love that combines fat and sugar, that you like to eat almost every day.
Chocolate. No.
That you like.
I like chocolate.
This food that you like it.
Mm. Oh, like ice cream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, we like it is open. It's April.
It is.
Over in Pomfret. Hi, we like it.
Very, very good.
I know. So, and what's the starch and fat one that everybody likes? Hint, what people like to break Passover with.
Bread.
Uh-huh. Starch and fat. Classic meal to break Passover with.
Pizza.
Got it.
Pizza.
So pizza and ice cream are weight gain bombs. I'm not saying never eat them. I'm saying that if you have pizza every week or a couple of times a week as a stopgap, Pizza. What do you want after you have a piece of pizza?
Something to drink.
What else? What do you want after you eat one piece of pizza?
Another one.
You got it. Right.
Okay.
And so think about this. So first of all, why on earth that's something that's so high in calories can you keep eating till you've eaten the whole pie? It's because of neuropeptide Y. It turns on your neuropeptide Y, which turns off your satiety signals. So when you eat starch and fat together, you don't feel satiated. So you can, that's why you can eat half a pizza. If you've tried to eat the same number of calories of nuts or salad or apples, you couldn't do it because the water and fiber in those foods makes you feel full. Protein as well, if pure protein without sugar in it. If you eat protein, you can't eat, you know, 500 calories of chicken breast like you can eat 500 calories like it. You could sit down and eat a pint of ice cream. And again, that's instead of starch and fat, that's sugar and fat. And sugar and fat, same thing. Turns on the neuropeptide Y so that you have no satiety. So before you know it, you're through a whole pint of We Like It or Ben and Jerry's or whatever your favorite brand is. And that's why. So should you never eat ice cream? No, you should enjoy your ice cream, but you have to figure out, again, maybe a couple times a week and not such big amounts, and have it after you've had a nice meal with fiber and protein a good meal of fiber and protein that helps to keep your blood sugar down so you're not so hungry for so much ice cream, and then you don't eat as much. And when you have a good meal that has protein, healthy fat, and fiber in it, it's going to make you less interested in eating a lot of starchy, sugary things after the meal. And even if you do, it's not going to have as much of a glycemic effect. So that's the other thing. Other things to, if you want to lose weight without really trying, eat more protein. Get your protein levels up. At the very minimum, 70 grams a day, more if you get regular exercise, between 80 and 100 is what most people need. And as you get older, you need to hit closer to that 100 gram mark because you don't absorb it as well. So eating a good deal of protein is a good idea. So there's just some simple ways. The other thing is drinking a lot of water. This is another topic. So anyway, just thinking about losing 5 to 10 pounds without stressing out too much about it, just like drinking extra water, cutting back on soda, cutting back on your creamy morning coffee, cutting back on alcohol. All those things can help you bring your weight down. And by the way, alcohol can raise your blood pressure as well. Oh, cut back on sugar and refined carbohydrates is the next item on this list. So restricting sugar and refined carbohydrates will help you lose weight and also can lower your blood pressure. And there was a study that compared various popular diets and people with overweight or obesity who did low carb and low fat diets saw their diastolic blood pressure fall by an average of 5 milligrams of mercury and their systolic by 3 milligrams of mercury after 6 months, which isn't a lot, but it could be significant. So if you're sitting at 135 over 90, coming down to 130 over 85 is a good thing. You've gone from, you know, being really into hypertension into being sort of borderline. It's not a bad thing. More potassium, less salt. So people tend to eat. Now, the issue about salt and hypertension is controversial. Certainly, if you eat no salt, that is not a good thing because you need salt.
I need salt.
This one can't hold on to his salt, so he has to salt the taste.
And if you
and your sister are slender, so you must have a well-functioning or an over-functioning angiotensin converting and, you know, renin angiotensin system in your kidneys.
Yeah, we don't maintain our sodium very well.
Right.
Right.
Right. So if you have if your renin angiotensin system, you don't make a lot of aldosterone, then you don't hold on to your sodium, and then you release sodium in water, and then you get into a low sodium situation, which could get you into a lightheaded situation. And you struggle with lightheaded, don't you?
I do.
Yeah, right. So
I do.
So you have to eat the salt. But if you are your average person and you're not like Ron and Susan, who are small, slender people, I don't like to say don't ever eat salt. Because people get really neurotic about watching every bit of salt in their diet. Hey, shout out to Gene Sear, who's listening. I'm not a big fan of saying don't ever eat salt. I am a fan of telling people to make sure that you're balancing the salt that you eat with potassium and magnesium by eating produce. So if you're eating a diet that's high in processed food, it's going to have a lot of salt in it. You know, there's going to be a lot more salt. And if you're not eating fresh fruits and vegetables and you're not eating clean protein and your diet is, you know, kind of a lot of junk food and a lot of bread and sweets, then your salt level is going to be, your intake of salt is going to be way high, and your ratio of potassium to salt is going to be low. So the way you get more potassium in your diet is vegetables and fruit. And no, it doesn't have to just be bananas. It can be anything. Bananas, one banana does have a lot of potassium, has a good 100 and change milligrams of potassium. But coconut water has a lot more. A glass of coconut water can have up to 700 milligrams of potassium. And, you know, when you get pills, they're often just, you know, 99 milligrams. All that will help. But fruits and vegetables, if you eat your fruits and vegetables, it's a very different scenario if you're eating a healthy whole foods diet where you're not eating a lot of processed food. And then if you're adding a little bit of salt to your salad at the end of the day, your great big salad with lots of produce in it, and which you're having with your lovely piece of fish, having a little bit of salt on the salad is not going to be a big deal. And I do like to recommend salt that's pink. So either real salt from Redmond, Utah. So Redmond salt, it comes from the salt flats in Utah. Celtic salt, Himalayan salt, they all have minerals. They all have trace minerals in them, more than just sodium chloride. They taste really good, and and they're not processed. So when you get iodized salt from the grocery store, it's going to have been heated. The way that it's heated and treated, it can change the conformation of the salt. When you get Redmond salt, or you get Celtic or Himalayan salt, they don't treat it. They just desalinate water, and here's your salt. Although I don't think the Redmond salt, the salt flats, if it comes from the salt flats, they don't even do that. They just mine it, and there's your salt. And the pink is other minerals. You know, when you get that pink color to your Himalayan or your Redmond salt, there's lots of trace minerals in the salt. So you're going to get more minerals. You're probably not going to get as much iodine if you have Celtic. You're going to get some, but you're not going to get the same amount as if you have iodized salt. And so if you have an iodine issue, you know, your doc can measure the iodine in your blood. And iodine is a really good thing to have on board. Iodine helps you to make thyroid hormone. And if your tissues are suffused with iodine, you're going to have more likelihood of fighting infections. Iodine is antimicrobial. One of the things that iodine kills, by the way, is COVID-19. So remember, back in the pandemic, we were telling people to gargle with iodine and do nasal sprays with iodine. I'm not as much of a fan of that, because I think some people were overdoing iodine, and you would measure their iodine levels and they would have an issue with high iodine. So I think it's not as much too much salt as it is too much salt in the context of a low potassium calcium magnesium diet. And a high potassium calcium magnesium diet is going to consist of fresh foods, fruits, vegetables, nuts, seeds, clean protein, whole grains, and lots of unprocessed stuff, legumes and beans as well. If you have way too much potassium, if you have kidney disease, that can be an issue as well. So if you have kidney disease, you have to work that out with your diet. You know, you can look at nutrition labels and you'll find foods that have way too much, way too much sodium, or way too much starch, sugar, things like that. So, all right. You can eat a heart healthy diet. And so remember the DASH diet, which is an NIH recommended diet the dietary approaches to stop hypertension. It's a heart-healthy option. What's in the DASH diet? This is going to shock you. Some really weird stuff. The DASH diet contains fruits, vegetables, whole grains. One of the things about DASH is they talk about low or zero fat dairy products. I think that it's controversial whether the saturated fat from dairy is bad for you. And I think if you are, that's something you can test for. You can find out if you are a cholesterol hyperproducer or hyperabsorber. And if you are, then it is a good idea to reduce your saturated fat. The other thing is there's a measure you can do called TMAO, trimethyl amino oxidase. Anyway, if you have that elevated, that can increase your risk of cardiovascular disease, and then it is a good idea to reduce your dairy fat. Otherwise, it's not necessarily. Dairy is best if it's grass-fed, if the animals are grass-fed, and you're going to have more omega-3 fatty acids in your full-fat dairy, and omega-3 fatty acids protect you from cardiovascular disease. You're also going to have more vitamin K2, and conjugated linoleic acid from animals who are mostly or exclusively grass-fed. So if you can get cheese and butter and ice cream and stuff from 100% grass-fed animals, that's going to be helpful to you. And if you don't, if you can't eat dairy because it makes you sick, then you shouldn't eat dairy. But the other thing to realize is it's not necessary to ever eat dairy. If you can eat dairy and you feel healthy when you're eating dairy, that's fine. But, and then you get into your grass-fed and very healthy dairy. If you are, if you get sick when you eat dairy, then you shouldn't eat dairy. And you have to remember that dairy, we're consuming the dairy of another species after the age of weaning. So if you never ate dairy again, you would be fine. I mean, maybe you'd not be fine mentally if you have a thing about ice cream or cheese, but, physiologically, you would be fine. It's not necessary to eat dairy. The only dairy that's necessary to life is your mama's milk when you were nursing. And if you never ate dairy again, you'd be fine. So what else is in the DASH diet? Fish, poultry, beans, nuts, and healthy vegetable oils. Now, when I say vegetable oils, I may mean something different than what they mean. I'm not a big fan of canola oil because it breaks down too readily and can cause oxidative damage. I'm more a fan of the monounsaturated, and I'm also a fan of virgin coconut oil. Virgin coconut oil has medium chain triglycerides, which help with your cholesterol, and they are a good energy source, and they're good for your nerve function. They're anti-inflammatory. So I'm a fan of virgin coconut oil, high quality olive oil, at 100% olive oil, and avocado oil is fine too, to some extent grapeseed oil. But I'm not a big fan of canola oil or certainly mixed vegetables oils or corn oil, if anything like that. What the DASH diet says to limit foods that are high in saturated fat and added sugars. So saturated fat, again, we talked about saturated fat. That may or may not be a problem for you. Added sugar obviously is a problem because sugar increases your insulin, and insulin increases inflammatory compounds. When you have more inflammatory compounds around, you're going to have more inflammation in your body. And generally, when you have more inflammation, your blood pressure tends to run higher because the inflammation will irritate your blood vessels, make them constrict more. They'll be less elastic, and they don't relax as well. When your blood vessels aren't as relaxed, your pressure is up. That's how it works. All right. Processed food. Shocking, right? If you eat too much processed food, you might have higher blood pressure. Shocking. All right. So, and processed food can lead to weight gain too, which can lead to higher blood pressure. Processed foods can have too much salt and poor quality salt, not Celtic or Himalayan or Redmond, can have unhealthy fats like hydrogenated vegetable oils or like canola oil, or other oils that aren't good for you. And they can have added sugars, and they can contribute to high blood pressure. Processed meats can be an issue. If you like to get cold cuts, you can choose cold cuts that are lower in sugar and lower in additives. Fast foods and fried foods, Well, fried foods, so if you're sautéing, if you're making a stir fry in a little bit of olive oil or coconut oil, that's not the same thing as getting something deep fried from the fast food place. When you go to, when you get fast food and you're getting deep fried stuff, and you're using, you're eating stuff that's in vegetable oil that's been heated over and over and over. So when that stuff is heated over and over, you're going to get hydrogenation, you're going to get breakdown of the oils, and you're going to get free radicals. And those free radicals are irritating and inflammatory to your blood vessels, which can raise your blood pressure. So, so eating less processed food will help you to avoid too much salt. Remember, the salt, you don't want to eat excessive salt relative to your potassium. It'll help you to eat less sugar and refined carbohydrates, and all of those things can lower blood pressure. And so this is going to shock you. Did you know that smoking cigarettes can raise your blood pressure?
No way.
Way. Who knew?
Well, people who think that smoking calms them down would be the first person.
They
who would
do.
Not know.
It does calm them down. I mean, if you're addicted to cigarettes, when you don't get to smoke, nicotine is the worst. It's the most difficult addiction to beat. My understanding is that nicotine is harder to beat than opioids, than sugar, than alcohol, than anything, a cocaine. It is a harder addiction to beat. One of the reasons it's probably harder to beat is because you can be in your life and smoke cigarettes, whereas, you know, you can't be, if there's a limit to how much cocaine you can do and still be in your life. And likewise with opioids, you know, if you take enough opioids, you're going to have respiratory failure, and you can't function. Whereas you can function while you're smoking. That's one problem. But it's true that nicotine, when you have nicotine cravings, it's nicotine. If you're addicted to nicotine, you get very agitated if you are not consuming your nicotine. It's true. So if you have a cigarette, it does calm you down. But cigarette smoking, especially if you're smoking cigarettes that are sugar cured. So one of the things that I do is when people are smoking, I try to get them to get into organic cigarettes, because cigarettes that are conventional commercial brands are sugar cured and have a lot of chemicals. They have burning agents in them to keep them burning. If you get organic tobacco, or, you know, smoking or an organic cigarette, you have to keep relighting it, and because it doesn't stay burning, because it doesn't have chemicals to keep it burning. Those chemicals that keep you burning are toxic chemicals. They're not good for you. And they are part of what makes cigarettes so carcinogenic. You have a lot of toxic chemicals, aromatic compounds in cigarettes. And you have the fact that you're, and acrylamides, which come from burning carbohydrates. And you have lots of opportunity for free radical damage when you smoke cigarettes. So, and you also get heavy metals when you smoke cigarettes. And heavy metals are one of the things that causes cardiovascular disease, because they cause free radical damage. Free radical damage, if you have oxidative damage to the inside of your blood vessels, your body's going to go ahead and try to repair it, and now you have blocked blood vessels. And when you have blocked blood vessels, you have higher blood pressure. So what do cigarettes do? They damage your blood vessel walls. I just said that. Causes inflammation, narrows your arteries. And when your arteries are narrower and harder and less elastic, your blood pressure can go up. Secondhand smoke also affects your blood pressure. So if you have to be in an environment where you're inhaling secondhand smoke, you might want to see if you can get out of that environment. Like if you work somewhere where people are smoking. If you could not work there, that would be better. Or if you could try to get it so that people don't smoke there anymore, that would be good too. If you're stuck in a situation where you have to inhale secondhand smoke, which happens sometimes, it's a good idea to take extra vitamin C. So I try to, and any of my patients who work in environments where there is a lot of smoke, I get them to take extra vitamin C. Your vitamin C needs are higher if you smoke or if you are around secondhand smoke. So vitamin C is not going, it's a harm reduction thing if you're smoking. It's better to not be around the smoke, obviously. But I do try to get people who are smoking or around smoke to take vitamin C pills, and also just to eat more vitamin C and things like strawberries and citrus and peppers and kiwi fruit. And, you know, generally produce has vitamin C in it. Did you know that having excess stress can increase your blood pressure?
That's kind of a no-brainer.
Yeah. So stress reduction. So stress, of course, why would stress increase your blood pressure? Well, there's a lot of there's a lot of ways that that happens. But one of the things about stress is stress increases cortisol. When you have higher cortisol, you're dumping more sugar into your blood, and so which raises your insulin. And when you have more sugar around, when your insulin's higher, you have more inflammation. So that's more damaging to your blood vessels. Also, when you're under stress, you have higher heart rate, higher blood pressure, because your body thinks you're in fight or flight. So there's going to generally be more pressure in your arteries. So whenever you have more pressure in your arteries, you're going to have more turbulent blood flow, which is going to beat against your arteries, and you get more more likelihood of oxidative stress. So stress reduction really depends on the person, and there's so many things to do. One of them is, if you have a stressful job, see if you can make your job to be less stressful. Can you change your job? Can you change your hours? You have to figure out what in your life is giving you the most stress, and can you manage the stress around that thing, whatever it is. Sometimes it's very hard to do, so you have to keep dealing with whatever the stressful situation is. So if you're a caregiver to a loved one, for example, that can be very stressful. If you're taking care of children, that can be stressful. If you're taking care of anybody who's not well, that can be stressful. So finding ways to rest from that stressor is a good thing. And sometimes doing things that don't have anything to do with that situation to help to reduce your stress is a good idea. So that's going to be things like practicing deep breathing, taking a leisure walk in nature, reading a book. And when I talk about reading a book, I like to talk about reading books not on a screen, because screens, when you look at screens, that's more stressful to your nervous system. I find it more calming to read a book on paper. And if you don't want to keep buying more books, that's where your local library comes in. Their local library is terrific. One of the things I had to do when I had to figure out ways to calm my autonomic nervous system is I discovered my local library. Now I'm a regular there. I'm very happy to be a regular there. And I read books on paper, and I find it very relaxing. It can be so relaxing that sometimes it will put me to sleep, which is not a bad thing. Listening to stress-relieving music is a great thing. So whatever that looks like for you. Some people may find that stress-relieving music is, hard rock or punk rock or something like that. And some people find that they want to listen to reggae, or they want to listen to yacht rock, which would be, your soft rock. And there's, sailing rock like Jimmy Buffett. I find listening to Jimmy Buffett very soothing and relaxing, because it reminds me of being at the beach and being in Florida. And I love the beach, and I love to go, hang out with my mom in Florida and be by the seaside. So listening to Jimmy Buffett music is just, happy. And I also happen to like, jam bands, especially Grateful Dead. And Grateful Dead can tend to be heart-centered and relaxing. And it's more relaxing than, say, listening to the Red Hot Chili Peppers, although sometimes I'm in the mood for the Red Hot Chili Peppers, just being mindful, having practices where you are deliberate and mindful about the things you're doing in your life. And then, of course, meditation, where you're doing deep breathing, and you can learn to meditate on your own, and you can certainly do guided meditations for people who are not used to meditating. I think guided meditations are wonderful. And you can find all sorts of guided meditation. There's videos for it online, especially on YouTube. And there's lots of styles. There's mindfulness meditation. There's Vipassana meditation. One of my favorites is Yoga Nidra. Yoga Nidra, you simply get into a super comfortable position, and you lie down, sit, however you are. It's some position that you can be in and be very comfortable for however long you're going to do the Yoga Nidra for. 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, half an hour and a half, you choose. Any amount of time that you spend doing deep breathing is going to help to reduce your stress. Deep breathing reduces cortisol. And cortisol is the main hormone that's going to push your fight or flight and make you not so relaxed. So when you can lower cortisol just by stopping what you're doing, relaxing, and doing deep breathing. So I'm going to run over to the Willy Co-op at some point today, I believe, and Ron asked me to get him some more cocoa powder. He had bought some inexpensive cocoa powder at some store, and I looked at the box, and I'm like, dude, this is alkalized. It's Dutched. If you're going to do cocoa to help your health and be antioxidant and help your cardiovascular situation, you need non-Dutched, non-alkalized chocolate. So if you're going to get cocoa powder, we have to get the non-alkalized kind. So when I go to the co-op, I'm going to get some more. So cocoa flavanols, there's going to be more cocoa flavanols if it's not Dutched, if it's not alkalized. So if you're wanting to use cacao as something that is going to reduce your stress and reduce your blood pressure, it needs to not be alkalized. So the flavonoids can help dilate or widen your blood vessels. They increase nitric oxide. If you eat lots of chocolate bars, that's not really good for you. It's because of the sugar. The problem is not the chocolate, it's the sugar. So I think a great way to increase your chocolate consumption without increasing your sugar consumption is to get non-alkalized, non-Dutched, unsweetened cocoa. And you can get it in powder form or you can get cocoa nibs. And then you can figure out ways to add them to your food. So if you eat fruit, if you have a bowl of fruit and you have a fruit salad and you put cocoa nibs in it, you can eat the cocoa nibs, and even though they're not sweetened, the sweetness of the fruit will contribute to how it tastes to you. You can throw cocoa nibs into your oatmeal. You can eat cooked quinoa for breakfast and have it sweet instead of savory. Put a tiny bit of maple syrup in it. You can put cinnamon in it, and you can put high antioxidant produce like goji berries and blueberries and blackberries and raspberries and strawberries. And you can add cocoa nibs, and then you can have quinoa with all that stuff in it. It's a little sweet, savory thing going on, but it's great. So if the chocolate is too high in sugar, fat, and calories, and it's not alkalized, so your basic brands, the basic ones you get at the grocery store, are going to be alkalized. So your conventional brands, I don't want to shout out too many, but there are brands. So what you want to look for is non-alkalized cocoa. We have the Carolina Wren singing.
Mm.
Yes. So then there's a whole bunch of herbs that can be helpful to help to lower your blood pressure. Black beans. Black beans can help lower blood pressure. Why? Because they have soluble fiber in it. Anything with soluble fiber is going to slow your digestive system down. It's going to reduce your lower glycemic. It's going to lower your blood sugar, and it's going to help lower your insulin, so you're going to have less inflammation. Anything with soluble fiber is going to help you to produce more beneficial probiotic, which is going to lower your blood pressure. And black beans in particular have anthocyanins. Anything that's dark is going to have anthocyanins, which are wonderful antioxidants. So cat's claw, not for Lyme disease only. Cat's claw also, it's anti-inflammatory, and it also can help to lower blood pressure. Celery juice, if you're into the medical medium, I'm not particularly, but some people drink celery juice and they think it's a great tonic to have every day. It can help lower your blood pressure, probably because it has a lot of potassium in it. Hawthorn, that's Chinese hawthorn. So hawthorn can also, Chinese hawthorn and also American hawthorn can help to lower your blood pressure because it's a positive inotrope. It helps your heart to be more efficient, so you have more blood coming out with each beat, so your heart doesn't have to beat as hard or as fast, and can tend to lower your blood pressure. Ginger can help to lower your blood pressure. Why? Probably because it's a wonderful anti-inflammatory. It helps your digestive system to function in a more even, calm way, which is going to put you into higher parasympathetic tone, which is your rest and digest. And if you're in higher parasympathetic tone, your blood pressure is going to tend to be lower. Giant dotter. I don't even know what that is. That's interesting. And Indian plantago, which is blonde psyllium. So psyllium is going to be helpful for blood pressure, once again, because it's a fiber. Anything that's high in fiber is going to slow your digestion down. It's going to lower your insulin and improve your probiotic status. maritime pine bark. So that's Pinus pinaster. So pine bark has an extract of that's called pycnogenol. Pycnogenol, once again, is an anthocyanin. So it helps to strengthen your blood vessels and prevent them from damage, which is going to make them more elastic and less likely to have hard volume against them. And your blood, with relaxed blood vessels, you're going to have lower blood pressure. River lily. So river lily, I'm not familiar with that herb. Roselle, which is known as hibiscus. So hibiscus is it's in the mallow family, and hibiscus is this beautiful red color. Anything with that beautiful red color is going to have more antioxidants in it. Now, hibiscus, I'm not clear if hibiscus has lots of anthocyanins or if it has ellagic acid in it. It may have either of those, but the antioxidants in hibiscus are what are going to help to strengthen your blood vessels. Sesame oil. So sesame oil has monounsaturated fats, and it's going to tend to be anti-inflammatory. Tomato extract. So tomato extract, it's because it has lycopene in it, and lycopene is a wonderful antioxidant. It's, again, going to be strengthening to your blood vessels. Tea. So when I say tea, I mean specifically the plant Camellia sinensis. And Camellia sinensis is white, green, and black tea. And yes, they're all the same plant. And no, they're not the same as herbal tea. Herbal tea are other plants. But Camellia sinensis, your black tea, when you want, I just want a nice tea. That's Camellia sinensis. Anyway, Camellia sinensis, even though it has caffeine in it, it has wonderful polyphenols in it, which are strengthening to your blood vessels, and over time can help to lower blood pressure. Umbrella tree bark, I don't know what that is, musanga. I'm not sure what, I'd have to look at that. I don't know if it's still in existence, but in Seattle there was a marimba band called Musango. That's a Shona word from Shona people of Zimbabwe. Anyway, okay, you know what else can help lower your blood pressure? Sleep. If you don't get enough sleep, your blood pressure will tend to be higher. So more and good quality sleep can be really helpful. Blood pressure tends to dip when you're sleeping, which is why I had a blood pressure med on board. I went to the bathroom and almost passed out. So I'm done with that. Not going to do that anymore. If you don't sleep well, you may not experience that phase. So there's all kinds of ways to help you sleep. Getting regular exercise, sleeping in a cool, dark room. Leaving devices outside of your sleeping room, or at least not using devices too close to bedtime. Avoid caffeine too close to bedtime, and setting a regular sleep schedule. So getting good quality sleep and working on your sleep can help to lower your blood pressure. Garlic. Now, I unfortunately can't do garlic unless it's like cooked way down and dehydrated and stuff. And cooked it, but I can't like do like doses of garlic, and I can't really do onions either. I'm one of those unfortunate non-allium people. I mean, I can do a little bit of seasoning if it's way cooked way down. Like we eat salsa in our on our fish, and I'm able to eat that. But and I have the everything bagel seasoning, and that has onions and garlic in it, and I'm able to do that. But like we can't put onions and garlic in our stir fries because it'll give me a stomach ache. So. Which is unfortunate because garlic is very helpful for lowering blood pressure. So you can take it in high dose pills with like five grams of allicin in it. Allicin. So allicin is an extract of garlic because the genus that garlic, onions, chives, scallions, shallots, they are the Allium genus, and they're all different species. So Allium sepa is onions and Allium sativa is garlic. And then they're all lilies. They're in the lily family. And then their genus is Allium. And some people can't eat them because they upset their stomach. But if you can eat them, if you're very lucky, if you can, because it's antimicrobial, it'll kill microorganisms, and it will help lower your blood pressure. Healthy high-protein foods are good for you, and protein can help lower your blood pressure. Why? Because it's a nitric oxide enhancer. You're getting extra nitrogen when you eat protein, and nitric oxide helps to lower your blood pressure. That's also how beets work, and how cocoa flavanols will help to their nitric oxide enhancers. Ellagic acid is a nitric oxide enhancer. That's where your pomegranate juice. This is how you drink pomegranate juice. All right. And it doesn't matter if the protein is animal or plant-based, which is exciting. So if you eat more beans, you can have lower blood pressure for a number of reasons. Part of it is the protein and part of it is the fiber. If you eat other protein, it's going to be more the amino acids. There's calming amino acids in animal protein, like your tryptophan. You're going to get some tryptophan. And amino acids in general tend to be calming. Glycine and leucine and isoleucine, they tend to be calming. And also, because you're consuming more nitrogen, you're going to make more nitric oxide, which is going to tend to lower your blood pressure. What foods are high in protein? Fish, such as salmon or canned tuna in water. And if you're worried about mercury in tuna, I was in the store and I found a low mercury canned tuna. So that's something you can look for. And I found this in the supermarket. There was in the tuna display, there was a brand of tuna that was bragging that we are the lowest brand, the brand with the lowest mercury in our tuna. So I thought that was very interesting. And what Paul at the fish market used to tell me is he said, I don't catch enormous tuna. The smaller the tuna that you get, the less mercury is going to be in it because it just doesn't have the time to bioaccumulate lots of mercury. So eggs, chicken breast, lean beef, beans and legumes, kidney beans, lentils, nuts and nut butter, such as peanut butter and chickpeas. All right. I think it's time we have to wrap up, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So I'm gonna pick up on this next time I'm in. So I'll see you in a few weeks, but we'll pick up on this blood pressure topic because it's such an important topic. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, MD, naturopathic physician with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live and Instagram Live episode at Fran Storch, MD. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS stores and WHUS.org.